You're listening to Careers and Cocktails, Career Talk with a Twist, hosted by expert recruiter Renee Fry. Let's get this party started.
Hey, party people. Welcome back to Careers and Cocktails. Today, I am thrilled to have Heather Westmoreland zooming in with us. And she's over in the Twin Cities. We're in Hudson, Wisconsin. Welcome, Heather.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You bet. I'm so grateful that you're taking the time out of your day to join us. And her cocktail of choice, another new one for me. I've never had this. I know it's crazy. We are making a whiskey ginger. I have never had Jameson in my life.
I'm glad I could fix that for you.
I know. Everyone's like, you've never had Jameson. You're the only one in the world who hasn't had Jameson. So we're going to do a whiskey ginger. We're just going to eyeball it. So I'm going to do about a quarter of my cup here with Jameson.
Oh, that's good.
And then I'm going to put the rest. We're using Schweppes. I think that's how you pronounce it. Ginger ale. I'll just fill it. Perfect. I'll stir it up a little with my fancy little spoon. You know how we roll in here. I'm going to try it. And you already have your cocktail made. So cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, that's delightful. That's like really refreshing. Why did I think Jameson was going to be this really powerful boozy forward? That's really good with the ginger ale.
It's nice and smooth. And I lived in Ireland for a while and actually went to the distillery in Dublin, and they distill it several times, and they put bricks in between the peat moss and the hops when they cure it, so that it doesn't have too as much of that, like, almost tastes like scotch, tastes like Band-Aids. But Jameson's a lot smoother because it keeps that smokiness kind of out of the liquor. So
awesome. I love that. It's great. Thanks for sharing and introducing me to it.
Yeah. Cheers to not having bad hangovers in the morning.
Gotta love that, man, especially as we age. My God. Ooh. That is so incredible that you got to go to the distillery. Ireland is on our list, but we haven't been yet.
Wonderful. Definitely check it out. Yeah.
So Heather, give us your elevator pitch. Who are you?
Well, I'm primarily, I would say, I'm a transformation coach. So people that they're stuck in their patterns, they're stuck in the same, really, they can't seem to get out of relationships that are problematic, work that's problematic, even patterns of thinking that are problematic. And I help them kind of get down in deep inside into the unconscious mind where these things are coming from and help them make a shift on that level.
And unconscious mind may sound scary to people, right? How do you make it less intimidating?
Well, I think, you know, the way that I talk about the subconscious, or as I call it, unconscious mind, is it's this vast network of strategies, basically, and resources that are there to try to help you thrive. And it's scary because it's beyond our conscious mind's ability to understand, because it's so massive and complex. They say the conscious mind processes right around 7 bits of information per second. And what they're saying on the unconscious mind is something like 14 million bits of information per second is being processed by the unconscious mind.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That can be intimidating because it's so massive, and sometimes it feels like it's possibly derailing you. But once you start to build a relationship with it, you can see that everything that's coming up through the unconscious mind is really there to try to help you thrive. So,
right.
It just needs a little corralling.
It's so fascinating. So let's jump on a party bus. We're going on a party bus. You had to pick someone who's alive. Who's going to join us, Heather?
Okay. Neil deGrasse Tyson is
Who's,
my
I don't know who he is.
oh, he's a physicist. He just has an incredible, I mean, he just seems like a lot of fun, but he's brilliant and he just has an incredible way of describing things. There's a video out there of him describing like different dimensions, the third, fourth, fifth dimensions. It's fascinating.
I'd
Check
be
it out.
all over it. I'd be all over it. So, if you could have any superpower in the world, what would it be?
So aside the one from the ones I already have, right?
Yep. Like we're talking Superman, Wonder Woman type powers.
Yeah, I think I'd have to go with invulnerability because, well, I think that sort of sums up my personality to a degree. When I was about 4 or 5 years old, I put a ski mask on my face backwards and ran as fast as I could and clipped a picnic table like bar here.
Ouch.
Kind of my personality. I just I'd rather just jump off a cliff or jump out of an airplane. So I think probably that would be the smartest one for me to pick is invulnerability. So I wouldn't have to be so careful.
That's cool. I love it. I like jumping out of airplanes too. It's so fun. So, how did you discover your true gift that you have?
Well, I think so. I went to coaching school, got my coaching training in 2009, and I had been a massage therapist, and a tax accountant actually before that. So,
What a combo!
but if you think about it, like they're both really looking at systems and how systems work together. And so that's always what fascinated me is really complex systems. And there's ultimately nothing more complex, I think, than the human psyche. So as I just kind of started diving in with people, through the coaching training, a lot of what they teach us in neurolinguistic psychology is these processes of helping somebody find where their issue is. And then a lot of times you'll like imagine having a conversation with somebody out in front of you. So when I was taking people through that as a really out of solidarity, out of empathy, out of care for often how difficult that was for my clients, I just started reaching my imagination out in front of me and imagining that I could see what they were seeing. So we were sitting kind of next to each other facing forward, and I would imagine that I could see, the person they were talking to, and often sometimes that the person they were talking to was no longer living. And after I did that for about 6 months, I started realizing that I was actually seeing something out in front of me. So for example, when it was a crossed over loved one, often I could see pictures and get messages. And for me, I'm an empath. I feel things deeply. So when I it started with just getting feelings, waves of feelings, and then eventually I just kind of took the risk to start speaking. And I would say things like, "Looks like your grandma's holding a stuffed animal." And the person would be, and I would describe it, and the person would say, "Oh my gosh, that's in my closet that my grandma gave me that. It's the only thing I have left from her." So just bizarre, totally unexpected. Like I said, I half tax accountant brain, like logical brain, half like creative, intuitive brain. So I was completely surprised. But so I would say like empathy and curiosity is really what led me to use my imagination in that way. And then by using my imagination, this ability sort of almost backfilled in.
That's incredible. So, I've had what do you call it? When you see something happening and then it happens.
Okay. So that So that would be like foresight or?
Foresight. Yeah, I've had that happen twice. The one time I was driving down Highway 94 heading into Minneapolis, and all it was the most bizarre thing, Heather. And I'm all about energy and spirituality. And I was driving, and no kidding, I saw like four accident pile up on the left, but then it wasn't there. And I knew, my gut told me, move to the right. So I moved over to the far right lane, and all of a sudden an accident, this 3-4 car pileup happened right before. And I was like literally shaking. I mean, I was like, holy shit, I just predicted that. Like, I just saw that. I just prevented, what the hell, what?
Freaks me out every time.
Like, and to this day, I still can't explain it. Like, how, what inside me said, move over, and I did it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think, I mean, anyone who's skeptical to some degree, it's like, fair enough, but how do you discount the experiences you have? You know, I mean, that is an objectively real experience in your life. So yeah, wow. Right.
And how did I meet my husband, who we're still madly in love with, and we'll be, I think, celebrating our 18th wedding anniversary. Like, we are destined to be together, you know, like, how were we both at Dick's Bar that night on Halloween in 1999?
I love it.
So, you know, I've been told, because I've seen psychics and talked to people that I have a friend who passed away, one of the most dear friends, one of my best friends. And he was very young, probably the closest person to me that's passed away. I've had, you know, aunts and uncles pass away. And grandparents, but he was the closest to my husband and I and our children. And I've been told that we all have this ability inside, but it's how we are comfortable with it. And how would you say we go about tapping into it, Heather?
Well, I think the problem most people have, the problem that I had, is most psychics that are out there and talking and teaching are clairvoyant. And so they're people that predominantly see things. And so I think there's something about, it's easier to take it seriously. It's easier to believe in yourself. It's easier to trust yourself when that's your primary ability, is clairvoyant. So then the rest of us are more clairaudient. So we'll hear things, or just like, and it's different than you think. It's not like you're literally hearing a voice or you're literally seeing something, you know? I mean, so the rest of us are clairaudient or we're empaths. So we'll kind of hear something in our head and think, why am I thinking that? And it kind of jumbles in with the rest of your thoughts. Or we'll feel something and we'll think like, what's wrong with me? Why am I reacting like this? And just disregard it because it feels so close to the rest of your senses. So I think the best way to begin to learn how to unlock this in yourself is to know that the way that it is going to come out of you is unique, and it's going to feel a lot more familiar. It's going to feel more like imagination than anything. So
interesting.
Yep.
So
when I first started figuring this out, I was getting tons of waves and waves of feeling. And once I just started taking the risk and speaking what I was feeling and saying, like, I feel like your aunt is here, you know, it just was totally a surprise and a shock. So it took me a long time to start saying it. But when I would say it, when I finally say it, then I could see things like I was imagining it in my mind's eye, and I could hear things. But it's like, we each need to figure out kind of what our predominant ability is that's like easy for you, rather than trying to turn yourself from an empath into a clairvoyant. Just work with, you know, for you, maybe it's, you might be more of a feeling one too. So you might have to start opening to the feelings and just start, you know, just start free writing or free speaking and start to learn to let those out. And then the more traditional, you know, clairvoyant kind of as a secondary or a third ability. So that was a surprise.
Do you, like, is that the same thing as our intuition, or are these two different concepts?
I would consider intuition a completely different set. So those things are more psychic abilities. So I don't know, you know, I'm not as much into the like fortune telling or forecasting. That's just not, I don't know about that. I mean, I think it has a beautiful use. I think like in your situation where you get these deep knowings and it helps keep you safe. But otherwise it seems like it may be more problematic than it is helpful to try to tell people their future. But I think as far as the other psychic abilities, I think could be helpful to help people heal, to help people grow, to get more understanding. But then there's intuition, which is a really embodied, it's your, I think of intuition as like my internal, thermostat of like where I am, what I want, how do I get really congruent about what the right thing is for me? It's personal, deeply personal thing.
And how do you know when to act on something? You know, like a lot of people, they just ignore it.
Right. Well, I think what so the main issue that I've used it for is my disposition sort of fundamentally. And then I think reinforced by our culture is just being a really big overgiver, being really focused on other people and what they want, what they need, and caretaking. And I realized that was out of whack and it was causing me tons of problems. So I decided to try to use my intuition to determine what were the right things for me to help people with and what was actually ultimately not helpful for me or for the other person, wrong for me and not helpful to the other person. So I think the important thing is to introduce the space for your intuition to even speak to you in the first place. So what I did was took all the pressure off myself. I decided that I wasn't going to say no to anybody because that was scary and stressful. And then like, what is my intuition saying? You know? So I decided like, keep saying yes to everything, but just take that beat. Notice it in my body. Is it a no or is it a yes? You'll start to learn like, okay, there's a certain part of my stomach and someone says, hey, will you come over and help me paint my house? And I get this certain feeling in my stomach and that's a like, oh, hell no, I'm not going to help you paint your house. I love you. I'll give you $20 to cover a painter for an hour. I don't know. But sometimes you just are really clear what things are for you to help with and not, you know. So I gave myself a month to run this experiment and I would write down, okay, Laura asked me to help. I said yes. My body said no. And then I would go to, you know, back to the journal after the event and write down, okay, you know, my body said no, and I went and did it anyways. And I ended up messing up my neck like I was worried about, or I ended up getting sick and having to back out, or I, you know, it just didn't happen, but I missed out on something else, you know? So I think just taking the pressure off of yourself, you don't have to play a guesswork, just take time, set a period of time where you're going to be serious about observing these things. Mm-hmm. And just letting yourself often for things like that, just letting yourself ask the question, you know, often we don't give ourselves that break to really even, we have so much conditioning about what's right or wrong, what we should do, what we shouldn't do, that we don't even take a second to ask like, what's right for me?
Right.
What's loving for me? I would argue that's what's right for everyone. I don't want somebody to come over and help me paint if it's going to hurt their body or it's going to be something that's going to upset, you know, be upsetting. Like, I don't want, then I'll ask someone else.
Right. And I hate what you just said about how we perceive right and wrong. I hate that. And I hate judgment. And I try not to judge people. And I just try to be really open, because what's right for me isn't right for you and vice versa. And I just try to accept everyone for who they are, which I think is really challenging though for most, because there's a lot of comparison going on, ego involved. And I don't know how I've been able to do it. Maybe through my experiences, having a deaf mother, being raised by unwed parents, like, you know, maybe it's because of the experiences that I had, but I've always been I'm able not to judge people, which I don't know. it's kind of cool in a way, but I wish other people could be the same, you know?
Yeah, most people. I mean, I think if you look at really the way we evolved and the way our brains work, we really like, it's very calming to the brain to have black and white categories. It's very calming, you know, I mean, I think like, I love all types of faith, but sometimes religions can get used to take advantage of that in people, you know, like their desire for black and white. So I think it really is, I'm so glad that you don't suffer from that affliction, but definitely most of us do. And it causes us pain because, you know, when we judge other people, we're judging an aspect of ourselves. So I judge somebody who's late all the time and I am super mad about that. It's like, what I'm judging is a part of me that sometimes is inconsiderate of people, not on that scale, but it's a control. So as much as we try to control other people, we're doing it in weird little, you know, scaffolding inside of ourselves. And that is painful.
You're totally right. When we do like, that's fascinating. I've never heard someone say it like that. So I love that, Heather. So how do we get comfortable with trusting ourselves and the decisions that we make?
I think it's a process. That's one of the hardest things in my industry is people aren't selling it's a process. They're selling outcomes because that's what is satisfying to people and that's what they want.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think I'm a little bit kind of pedaling upstream to a degree because I'm kind of always saying like, yeah, you're never going to be perfect. This big healing spurt you're having right now is awesome. And that's going to take you up a level and then you're going to live some good life in there. And then something else is going to get triggered. And then it's time for your next level up. Like that's this beautiful way that we progress through life. So, my thought about it is, you know, start to find a way that works for you, start to find a coach or a therapist or a process that works for you and just be gentle with yourself and stop expecting yourself to be perfect and other people around you to be perfect. I think sometimes that can also be trying to get the outside world to change you. Have these high expectations of other people. It's like, if they would just be different, then I wouldn't have to feel this. If they would just take care of this for me, I wouldn't have to grow in this way. So really just taking the personal responsibility and letting it, and working to let it be a process rather than expecting yourself to just be different overnight.
Yeah, that's totally the ticket, and being gentle, because you always have to be introspective. You have to change. I'm curious, did you have to go through a lot of this on your own to be able to coach people on it? Like, where did all that come from?
Yeah, I think I came into the world with such a sensitive organism. Just very, feel everything. I feel other people's feelings. And then I think like my family and as many families do, in our family, we dealt with, both my parents were alcoholics and recovered, when I was about 10. So we dealt with codependence, alcoholism. But then even after that, some influences from the church and I think, but just our society about like how women are supposed to be, I have recently started thinking about it as like I have traumatized femininity. So when I got out on my own, I ended up in bad relationships. I was in an abusive relationship. I gained a ton of weight. My life was just out of control. And I just had a big wake up call and got away from that, out of that relationship. And then I began what's now been over a 20-year journey of learning and growing. I think I was ready to start helping people, but I just didn't have the tools. And so learning neurolinguistic psychology and hypnotherapy through the Meta Institute, which is now closed, but that was a great way to just give me some more tools to really help people transform.
Awesome.
But I do think the biggest thing that I bring to coaching is a non-judgmental position. And I don't give advice. I might give you some ideas of how to look at something differently, but I don't think there's any one right way to be. I think that people just need help with uncovering their own resources and their own healing ability within themselves. So I think that's people come in when they work with me, they just feel really accepted and seen and supported. It almost like they're doing all of it on their own. They just have a coach to just kind of like look that direction in yourself. So
yeah, I love that you and I are on the same wavelength. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
I'm the same way. It's funny because when I do career coaching for people, and they do all the work and they come up with the ideas. I just help them see the forest through the trees, you know? And it's so frequent that I have clients who right away, they're just so emotional, crying, and they're like apologizing for being emotional. And I'm like, don't apologize.
This is the point. This is a sign that we're totally on track and we've got it right. If you're that emotional center, there's so much. We learn so much from our emotions.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's awesome. So fascinating. Okay. So we hear of a lot of people who feel like they're missing something, or they have a feeling of dissatisfaction in their career or their life or love, whatever it is. What causes these unconscious roadblocks, and how do people overcome them?
So super easy question. No problem. I'll just answer that in 5 words. I'm just kidding.
It depends on people.
Okay. So the way that I see us structured is that we are in our fundamental core, we literally are love, safety, value, freedom, peace, like it's what you are. And these things sort of radiate out of us like a sun. But something about being here in this life, we need our environment and the things around us to light those things up. So basically, like the way our systems get programmed is like, I won't let myself feel the value that I am unless I'm having job success, or I won't let myself feel love unless this specific person loves me, right? So even though we are these things and theoretically anything could light up those qualities, if we make inroads to that, we get locked in these different times in our life. We make decisions like, okay, if my dad doesn't love me, then I'm not lovable and I don't get to have love. So I have to keep hustle, earn that, you know? Or unless I'm doing something massive with my career, I'm not valuable. Mm-hmm. So based on that model of looking at it, I think the best way to start making changes is to look at when you're fantasizing about this thing you want that you don't have, the person, life situation, job, what do you imagine you'll have then that you don't have now? So say it's, you feel lonely, and so it's about connection. I think the best way to move forward is to start to look at all the ways that that connection can get lit up in your system. So do you have a pet? Do you have, like hang out with trees, go be out in nature, certain kinds of music, like look at all the ways that you can basically use what you have already to light up that quality in yourself. And then it's like you start to just filter reality different. So you start to gravitate towards different people. You start to gravitate towards different jobs or different roles in your job that will light that up more. But I think unfortunately, oftentimes we change our situation, but we don't end up getting the result we want. We don't get more connection. We don't get more love. We don't get more value because we haven't changed the strategies in which we let ourselves experience it inside of ourselves.
Fascinating.
So, all we're doing is building this muscle of when I have that, then I can feel this. And I cut it all out.
Right. It's bullshit. It stop telling yourself that lie.
You already have it. And if you want more, I want you to have more. But I think the way to get it is to learn how to understand that it's like a muscle. And if you just build that muscle of feeling love, then people treat you in a way that lights that up more. Yeah. Work lights that up more. So start where you're at.
There's so much into that. Okay, we got to go back. I'm taking notes. So first of all, I love the radiate sun. I have a sun tattoo on my body. I love the sun. I love that. I'm like, okay, of course. She's tapping into me. And then when you talked about with your dad and to get love, you have to hustle and earn more. You hit it. So I got counseling for perfectionism in college because I thought that people were perfect. And turns out no one's perfect. And my phrase is progress, not perfection. But through this counseling, I had a huge epiphany that the reason why I wanted to make so much money and keep climbing the ladder was because my dad wasn't very active in my life. He was really an absent father and didn't come to any of my sports competitions, didn't come to my graduation, nothing. And I thought if I made the most money of all my siblings, I would get love from him, which you said in a nutshell. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, I kind of often accidentally do that. I didn't mean to read you.
No, I'm just being really vulnerable here because there's a lot of value in this, right? In those, the son and the dad, that like I had to share this because
a lot of people yeah.
But anyway, I'm over that with my dad.
Well, huge, and what freedom for you to be able to know that you move the locus of control for your value outside of yourself, where you can never really ever get it to inside of yourself, right? Like you choose what makes you valuable. Like I'm getting goosebumps. That is everything.
Me too. But you know what happened then, Heather? Is I went home to my husband, Dustin, and I was like, my whole life has been a lie. My whole life hasn't been for me. And that was mind blowing, effing crazy. Like, and then I had to sit down and figure out what does Renee want? Right. And that was like earth. I swear the ground was like collapsing and I was going in it because I was now what do I do?
That's exactly how I describe, it is like when you're close to, I'll call that like for convenience sake, I'll say that that's your false core. So your false core was something like, I'm not valuable. And then you build this whole strata up inside of yourself to try to prove that you are based on the things that probably for most of us, it's like as a kid, I'm like 8 and I'm trying to figure out how to make my dad love me. So you're like, oh, well, if I'm the shiniest, and most money, most accomplishments, prettiest, whatever we decide in our little kid brain. And then that becomes like a building block and we keep building these like strategies on top of this one false core because you are value. You can't not be. You can't earn it. You can't lose it. So when we feel that like the floor is about to fall underneath us, I think we're right up next to that belief that is covering our experience of our true self. Yes, so yes. It's wild you describe it like that.
it was crazy though. And that was quite probably a decade ago. Yeah, it's been quite some time, but I had a lot of work to do to get through that. And I did. Going back though, you talked about imagining what people want to have. I use that technique every single day and imagine what I want as if I have it today. And
use gratitude, right?
Yes. And I do write down 3 things I'm grateful for every day. Everything I've imagined has come true.
Wow.
Everything.
Wow. Wow.
But I learned it from, the book called Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles. So I'm a huge book reader and personal growth. And about 3 years ago, I really went on this personal growth journey. And my husband jumped on board with me because I could totally see, I was like, if we don't do this together, I could see us growing apart because the language I was using and what I was aspiring to do, I could feel that. And so I got him on board and we started this journey together. We read like Napoleon Hill's books, As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. And we did all this together with this group of people. It's like a mastermind group. And we did some awesome things, but that book, Science of Getting Rich, I actually read it once a month. It's super easy read, but it taught me how to imagine and feel it in my core as if it were already here. And I'm telling you, it works.
Neat. Yeah.
But yeah. I'm trying to tap into more of like my, like who's around me. So there's, do you see those pop-up cards? Do you ever have... like they're in these little boxes and then you can take quotes out of them. Yeah. But one of them was by the quote, and I'm not going to say it verbatim because I don't have it in front of me, but it was Wayne Dyer, I think, or Dyer. And it said, if you knew who was surrounding you on your journey, you would never let fear hold you back or something like that. Which makes, like, I'm trying to tap into more of my spiritual guides and like utilize the energy we can't see to keep me, you know, moving forward. Mm-hmm. But it's, I don't even know what to do. I just named one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's my sense of all of it is that it's just so complex and so complicated, but you know, just opening yourself up even to thinking about the way that just the sun and the planet and the plants and trees and animals, just everything like that you could literally see and feel and touch around you is supporting you and holding you and loving you. I mean, and then just take that one step further and think about, you know, are there people who've crossed over, spirit guides, angels, whatever, however you experience that. I'm fiercely anti-dogmatic, so I don't have any, you know, I think things come to us in the way that it can most benefit us and most serve us. So if you sense something around you and you just reach out your mind and reach out your imagination, I mean, you could even just sit and think like, okay, I feel like there's somebody off to my right-hand side, and then just imagine you're moving your mind over to where that being would be. And then just start free writing or speaking and record it of just, I think it's a man. I think he's about 36. He's wearing a bow tie. He's talking to you about your dog. You know, you just start practicing and then eventually it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. But you have to be, have to let it be playful. And I think just don't take it all that seriously. If it's something that's leading you, like, could somebody argue that there is no such thing as ghosts? Like, sure, I would agree with that, but there's some experience we are having that's real. So maybe that's a collective unconscious, maybe it's something else, but whatever it is, if it's making you more connected to yourself, more loving, more peaceful, you know, maybe don't like turn it into a Bible and try to force everybody to believe what you believe, but keep going.
Exactly. Well, it's just like the analogy of the radio. If I tune into a radio station here, the energy waves are constantly coming into this space, whether my radio is on or not, and I can't see it. It's invisible.
Right.
But you got to tune in your radio station to, you know, KDWB 101.3 or whatever to pull in that frequency, right? So I love to use that analogy.
Yeah, but you have to create a space for it. And I think that's what I had never really done before. I didn't understand that, like, because a long time ago, I kind of tried to tap into my psychic abilities and determine that I didn't have any. But I would say the more you let it be light and playful, and if you get a little nugget out of it that helps you, like, that's perfect. Just keep going along with it. But if it's scary stuff, like someone's gonna die or you've got evil energy around you, like No, I would say get some support.
Yeah, I agree. How can we empower our listeners to break free from negative self-talk? Because I know this is a huge problem in the human condition, right?
The only, you know, I love, I don't mean to be condescending, but how naive, like, people are that talk about positive thinking and like, and it's like, oh, precious. That's so precious.
You don't want to know. Yeah. I'm an ultimate optimist then.
Oh, I love that. But just like, but thinking that like, if I repeat a positive line in my head over and over, that's going to get rid of all positive thinking, you know?
No, you got to unpack shit to do that.
It's not, you can't have all mantras. That was the word I'm looking for. That just like having a mantra, like everything is great all the time. Like, yeah. So that is a bummer because it doesn't work. And it, I think, distracts you from a deep well of what's underneath that negative self-talk, because often it is that you don't feel valuable. And if you lost a little bit of weight or managed to have your house look perfect all the time, or your kids were always like perfectly behaved and wonderful in every moment of your life, then you'd be valuable enough, you know? So I think those types of voices don't stop until we go in and investigate and find what they want. So the best way that I know how to do this is start to create a character out of the person speaking. So for example, it's not in line with my personality. Sometimes when I would see someone on Facebook who like, they just have the perfect white teeth husband, white teeth little boy, little girl, and they're on vacation and they're thin and tan and happy and perfect. Like, so, and my true self, I see that and I'm like, yes, wonderful, go have, live your best life, be happy. But this other part of me was like, oh, really? I bet he's cheating on her. And man, 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 aren't they perfect? Like, I just was having this voice in the back of my head. Like, it was like nagging on them, but also on me, because I'm not good enough. And I don't have this like exactly picture Instagram perfect life. So I started investigating that. And I thought like, about how old is that? Well, she feels about that when I'm in that state of mind. I feel like I'm 13 years old and I'm back in junior high and I don't know what to say and I don't have the right clothes and I'm just kind of a weirdo. Because I'm not good at being a mean girl and I'm not, you know, just didn't fit anywhere. And I think like, what did she want so badly? And she wanted connection. And she thought if she could just appear the right way that she could have that connection. So then now, so I wrote this whole story about her. I understand her. She has a name. She has, she's a very different person in my mind. And so then when I hear her voice and I feel her feelings come up, of it's anger, but it's also shame. I'm like, okay, honey, come on. We're not picking on people today. I'm just going to take you and we're going to go do something where I feel valuable, light up my value. I'm going to call a friend. You know, those are signs for us that we're off track and we're not lighting up what we really are. So I think once you create the character, then when they arise, then you be the leader. Your heart is your mind, your love.
I love that. That's so deep. I love what you said about do something then that makes you feel valuable.
Yeah. I mean, once you loosen your value from these strategies, you can get it anywhere. Right. You light it up all over the place. I call one friend. She can't talk. Okay. I hope she's well. I hope she's getting her needs met. I'm going to go call that friend. I'm going to go hang out with a tree. I'm going to.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, it's disconnected. It's, you're totally free.
Right. That brings me to relationships. So throughout our life, we meet people who, you know, I call them seasons, who are in our life for maybe a season. Maybe we're maintain relationships with them for our lifetime. But when we decide to do what I call weed the garden, kind of purge certain relationships that are no longer serving you, do you have any tips on that or recommendations or when to know?
This is a hard one for me. I've only done this a few times in my life. So part of it is, I think that when you have a structure in place of a way of relating to a person, you're half of that dance. So say, you know, say, so for me, it may be something like, I'm just a really emotionally caretaking of somebody, and they're taking advantage of that, whether they realize it or not, you know? So if I cut that flower off, another one's going to just pop right up because I'm still doing the same dance, you know? Right. So I'd say really, really work to make sure that you're not trying to shortcut your own work by cutting somebody out. But then after, at a certain point, it does become unloving to yourself to continue those relationships. And so then at that point, I think it just really comes down to trying to go deep, deep, deep and take personal responsibility for what the person's triggering in you, the way they're showing up and what that means to you. And then when you do, if you can't just ghost them and you do come to communication, you can come to it with a, you know what, when we started this relationship, I established that this was an okay way to be, and it's not serving me anymore. And so I have to make a change for me. And thank you for helping me learn. You know, there's just a way to have these conversations and confrontations that are so personal responsibility and love. But if you're going to do it, you gotta be sure you're going to like really go all the way.
Right. Totally agree. I love what you said about personal responsibility, because I don't know where I learned it, Heather, but along the way, I realized I am in control of how I react to anything. And so when there is a conflict or something isn't going right, I always turn internally first and say, what did I do? What am I doing? What am I thinking? I always look internal first. So I love that you said that about personal responsibility.
And I think like a big part of it is like, we need to learn how to tell. So say you're ready to break up a relationship when things are at a 10, we need to learn at a 2 when things are starting to bother us to speak in real time and say, I'm feeling weird. Can we talk about it? You know, and come from this calm place of personal responsibility, you know, but I think we're so afraid if we say anything slightly negative about what's happening, people will feel judged, and you know, so we wait and we build up this whole narrative inside of ourselves that they're the bad guy, when we just don't, we're afraid of confrontation. We're afraid of these little confrontations. And so make it so that in the end, we're just so disgusted by the person that we have to just blow the whole thing up.
Right.
I think if we could get better at, you know, I think, you know, we might end up alienating these people on their own just by holding them accountable in little ways.
Right. Do you think that stems in vulnerability? People don't want to be vulnerable? Or do you think it's a communication gap?
Maybe. Well, I want to say it's being Minnesotan, but I know it's not, we don't own that. I think really, if I was going to break it down, I would say it's about thinking that there is an external right and wrong. And I should be this kind of friend. I should do this. I shouldn't do that. They should do this. They shouldn't do that. Rather than, you know, this, I don't want to do that. They call and ask you to do something and you just say, no, I don't want to. Because you checked your intuition and it says no. Or they say something and it triggers you. And we think we're not supposed to speak up for ourselves, or we're not supposed to hurt other people, imagining and assuming that me speaking my truth for myself is hurtful, could hurt someone else, which I don't think that's true, but.
Yeah, I don't either, which is interesting because I'm very, you know, I mentioned earlier, I was raised by a deaf mother and the American Sign Language is very direct language. So, you know, I grew up in Minnesota and I was very direct in my communication, and it was kind of off-putting to a lot of people. I learned how to navigate it in corporate America while I worked at Target. But I wasn't going to change who I was because that's who I am. And I'm confident. And I accept everyone for who they are. So, and I've just gotten better at that throughout the years, and just like, that's okay. If you want to do that's okay. And have learned to embrace that even more. But yeah, and I think what it came down to for me is I don't mind what people think of me. Now, I do mind what Dustin and my two daughters think of me. That's really important to me. But in the grand scheme of things, no one is ever going to step foot into my shoes. No one's ever going to be inside my body. And so it doesn't matter. All that matters is what I want and what I'm doing. And, you know, obviously I'm a good person and I'm nice, but really nobody's going to walk in my shoes. And which I've got to say, I'm so grateful for my husband because he truly accepts me for who I am. I'm loud. I'm a lot, but like he fundamentally accepts everything about me, which is incredible.
And we, and those people are out there for all of us. We just have to, and we have to, like you said, I mean, for those of us that have really had to, had a lot to overcome in that department, it's just important to just keep working on it and keep looking at like, what if you are just who you're supposed to be right now? What if your fundamental nature is exactly how it's supposed to be? And, you know, if, and really keep, just keep bringing logic to it. Like, look at all the differences of people and opinions in this world. If everybody loves you, you're a amoeba. You're not, you can't, that you can't be, you can't feel. That means you're doing some kind of wild and contorted gymnastics at all time.
Right.
To have a universal appeal. I mean, my thought is I hope about 80% of the people that are exposed to my stuff are like, nah, because I only want to work with the people that like, they hear this and they feel excited and they feel empowered and they feel seen and they feel loved. I'm not going to change who I am or what I'm doing or how I'm saying it to try to reach more people, because there's other coaches and teachers out there for them.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and it's exactly with like my friends and family and relationships in my life. If I have to change something fundamental, then, you know, how many billion people are there out there? 7 billion. I don't know.
Gosh, a lot.
Plenty. There's plenty of people.
Plenty. I love it. So where do you get your inspiration from, Heather?
I think really what it comes down to is watching magic happen with the people that I work with. Just, we go, you know, I use the word healer, but just for convenience sake, I don't need to get into a semantic argument with everybody about it, but it's really what it is a client and I go into a space right at the right spot where the pain is, where the pain formed, and we open up and we witness, and something, a miracle happens, something magical happens. And like, that is the most inspiring thing to me, is being able to take somebody there and then open up to something beyond our wildest imagination that's factoring in millions and millions and millions and millions and infinite amount number of things. And then it takes you apart and puts you back together in a new order. And then you feel more love and you feel more peace and more powerful and, you know, just enough to get you to your next level, you know, and then in a couple months or a year, you do it all over again.
I love it. I love it.
Inspiring.
You have shared so much magic with us and so many value bombs. Where can everyone find you, Heather?
My website is heatherwestmoreland.com, and you can find me at Medium Heather Westmoreland on Facebook.
And your website is awesome, super fun. You've got like, right, graffiti pics, right?
Yeah.
So cool. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
This is fun.
Cheers.
Glad you found a new drink.
Yeah. Thanks for introducing me to Jameson.
You're welcome. Have one for me at the Jameson Distillery in Dublin when you're there.
I'm going to haul my whole family there after this COVID business.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for you and all of your knowledge, Heather.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers. Please be sure to subscribe to Careers in Cocktails on YouTube and drop us a review on your favorite podcast app. If you're looking to update your resume or you're stuck in your career, I'm designated by LinkedIn as the top resume writer and career coach expert. I even created a resume and e-learning course to help you. If you want to do your own resume, it's super simple and extremely affordable. Go to careersandcocktails.com to learn more. I am here to share information and help people love what they do. Until next time, cheers.